Trial opens on Monday that could determine the fate of the Barnes Foundation, the $20 billion art collection and school near Philadelphia. The foundation is having financial troubles and is asking a court for permission to break the trust to founder Albert Barnes and move the collection to a new gallery in downtown Philadelphia. The outcome of the trial could turn on how that move could affect the foundation's art education program. From member station WHYY, Joel Rose reports.
The late Dr. Albert Barnes was wary of the press. When Barnes granted an interview to Carl W. McCardle in 1941, he made the reporter sign a contract promising to show him a final draft of the story. McCardle didn't, and when the story titled The Terrible-Tempered Dr. Barnes ran in the Saturday Evening Post, Barnes was, of course, furious. Besides the inaccuracies Barnes alleged, he said the Post had missed the real story, namely the educational work of the Barnes Foundation. So in April of 1942, Barnes went into Philadelphia radio station WCAU to set the record straight.
The foundation was chartered as an educational institution by the state of Pennsylvania on December the 4th, 1922. The students enrolled in our classes have comprised all strata of society, from college professors to truck drivers, all races and all shades of political and religious belief.
But from the start, the press was more interested in Barnes's fabulous pile of art and his notoriously short temper than his educational experiment, says Barnes Foundation Executive Director Kimberly Camp. At the same time, she says, the public has mistakenly thought of the Barnes Foundation as a museum.
Barnes established this as a school, plain and simple. As early as 1930, there were challenges to the foundation's nonprofit status because Barnes did not open the collection to the public. And what he said was, this is not a museum, it's a school.
It's a school with an art collection that defies imagination. The Barnes Foundation has 60 paintings by Matisse, 44 by Picasso, and 181 by Renoir. It has more paintings by Cézanne than the museums of Paris combined. Barnes also collected early American furniture, African sculpture, and metal hardware from all over the world. He compiled those objects and paintings into ensembles, as he called them, that are supposed to teach a very specific approach to art appreciation.
It's the accumulation, the combination of all of these visual elements existing or being utilized simultaneously, almost enriching, creating a fabric, a visual fabric.
Today, John Gatti and five other art instructors at the foundation teach class in front of those same ensembles. Gatti says by seeing these seemingly unrelated objects together, students can get an understanding of principles like color, line, and use of space, and a sense of how artists see.
You don't get a slide, black space, a slide, black space. You're inundated with the intimacy of these objects. And in fact, they're learning to paint without a paintbrush. They're learning to think as an artist does.
The curriculum was designed in part by Barnes himself. In 1917, Barnes struck up a friendship with the pragmatist philosopher John Dewey. Soon Barnes was offering voluntary classes for the workers at his pharmaceutical factory, based on Dewey's principles of education, as Barnes pointed out in his 1942 radio appearance.
The educational program of the Barnes Foundation is basically a continuation on the larger scale of the experiment made with the humble factory workers. This time, an experiment with scientific method applied to the study of art, particularly paintings.
When the Barnes Foundation opened in 1925, John Dewey himself gave the opening remarks.
Dr. Barnes is well known for the fact that he uses his collection as a force in a definitely educational enterprise.
Dewey and Barnes shared the belief that anyone could benefit from an education in the arts, says Marianne Myers, author of the forthcoming book, Art, Education, and African American Culture.
The essence of pragmatism, in a way, is that destiny isn't prescribed by race or by class. People are the agents of their own fate. They can educate themselves the way Barnes educated themselves, and that's what he wanted to share with people.
The Barnes Foundation existed almost exclusively for its students until 1961, when the Pennsylvania Attorney General forced the nonprofit foundation to open its doors to the general public one day a week. Today it's open to the paying public 3 days a week. But the foundation is almost broke, and administrators say the only way to save it is to move the collection to a new building on Museum Row in Philadelphia. Executive Director Kimberly Camp says the Barnes would still be a school.
It's not going to mean that millions of people are going to stream through whenever they want. We'll probably still have time tickets. We'll probably still have a visitation that is tempered with class time, whether it's classes during the day or classes in the evening.
But those probablys worry Barnes student Harvey Wank. He says so far, nothing specific about how the move would preserve the Barnes Foundation's educational program is in writing, and Wank is afraid the foundation would become just an ordinary museum, with students as an afterthought.
The amount of time that we really have right now to review the paintings without crowds there is very limited. If this is moved to Center City, there would really be no intimacy, no time to review these paintings without having large crowds there.
Harvey Wank is one of three students who will try to prevent the move at the upcoming trial. They've been allowed to argue their case as friends of the court. Both sides agree some change is needed to the foundation's charter, and both insist they want to honor founder Albert Barnes's intent.
The classes are conducted every day, are filled to capacity, and there is a waiting list of several hundred desirable applicants. In short, the foundation is an educational institution with a well-defined purpose and a very full program, and that is why it cannot be a public gallery.
The trial that could determine whether or not that will change begins on Monday outside Philadelphia. Testimony is expected to last about a week. For NPR News, I'm Joel Rose.